So, welcome back to The Green Room, where we review the week in cannabis. I'm Martin Lane, the co-founder of Cannabis, and joining me is Cannabis Editor-at-Large, Rhys Cohen. Rhys, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Not too bad, thank you. Now I know you've been moving house in the last week or so, and you've had a few internet issues. So, are we blaming Telstra, or are we blaming Optus?
It's actually my own stinginess. I thought that I could get away with using one of the old modems, and I absolutely can't. So I've now got a 25-meter Ethernet cable that's running from downstairs to my computer, and I'll fix the rest of it in time. I can't blame the telco this time as much as I would like.
Okay, well, it's good to have you back. And I should say, we did actually attempt to record an episode of The Green Room last week when you were hotspotting off your phone. Mm-hmm. And it didn't really work, did it? So I like to think of it as it's like the missing episode. It's a bit like Prince's Black Album.
Which we are very much like Prince, I think, in terms of social standing and talent.
Absolutely, 100%. And actually, interestingly, I'm 1 year younger than Prince when he died. So
There you go. We got another year in you.
We have all sorts of things in common. Anyway, pressing on. So, interesting week last week. The Greens introduced a bill to legalise the recreational use and possession of cannabis in New South Wales. So households would be allowed to grow up to 12 cannabis plants, social clubs up to 99, and previous cannabis convictions would be expunged. Products would carry health warnings and information about the strain and THC/CBD content. Retailers wouldn't be allowed to promote or advertise their wares, and stores would be prevented from operating within 200 metres of a school or childcare centre. Now, Rhys, you've been writing about this in a piece which will appear on Cannabis in the next day or so. All sounds quite good in theory. Hasn't got a hope in hell of being passed.
Absolutely not. Yeah, no. So this is definitely not going to pass the Senate, which is fine because that's not really the point of the bill. Like many of these sort of very early stage proposals, it's more of an agenda setting thing, I guess you could say. So, you know, having this bill, having it formalized, having something to hold on to, having specifics to talk about and debate, allows the Greens and other people to talk about legalizing recreational cannabis in a way that isn't just a bunch of hand waving about what might or might not be the case. You know, gives you something to a bit of a foundation, which is nice. And it's quite a well thought out sort of, you know, structure, I think, considering the intent is not necessarily to use this bill to legalize recreational cannabis in New South Wales. They've done quite a good job of figuring out and balancing some of the nuances and some of the competing interests there. I mean, like, for example, you know, the not being within 200 meters of a school thing. I mean, if the legislation were to be passed, you wouldn't be able to identify these stores from the street to begin with. So it's not, you know, it could be next door to a school and none of the kids would find out, probably. I don't really know. So, you know, there's a bit of negotiation that you can see sort of manifesting in the bill there about how concerned people are with cannabis legalization.
I thought it was interesting looking at the bill and also reading your piece that in some ways, you know, it does feel like obviously the Greens are kind of driving an agenda here in the way that the other political parties aren't kind of prepared to use up political capital, maybe. I mean, I guess the Greens' natural base of support is likely to be more pro-cannabis than the other parties. On the other hand, it sort of felt, in a way, a little bit defensive in the sense that, as you say, there's a bit of second-guessing going on here. It's kind of legislation which won't pass but has one eye on what its opponents might think, say, or do. And I wonder whether that seems like a sensible approach because it cuts off some of the kind of, you know, the immediate knee-jerk reaction type stuff. But on the other hand, it doesn't feel that confident, if you know what I mean. It's not kind of best foot forward. It is kind of second-guessing some of the arguments which I guess you have to do if you want to actually even have a reasoned debate.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment. Like, you know, it is a political document fundamentally. So the intent is to set the agenda, get talking about cannabis legalization, but not do it in a way that makes your argument easily refutable. You know, I think presenting the ideas in this way makes it difficult to dismiss this bill out of hand. Or, I mean, plenty of people will dismiss it out of hand, but it makes the people who dismiss it out of hand seem dismissive as opposed to having a considered opinion necessarily. But it is a bit of a compromise, and it does address quite a few different, you know, groups of stakeholders, right? So within the bill, there is obviously the expungement of convictions for you know, cannabis convictions, which, you know, speaks to the sort of social justice and restorative justice elements of the bill. There's also the provision for cannabis social clubs that not-for-profit groups can collectively cultivate and supply cannabis to their members, which is a way to facilitate access in addition to home grow, which is also there. And then, of course, in addition to those, there's also a commercial framework. So it does seem like they're trying to hit all of the main sweet spots here in terms of the kinds of things that people generally want out of cannabis legalization. You know, often it's one or two of those things, and they've got sort of all four in the same bill. So yeah, I mean, kudos to them. I'll look forward to seeing, you know, how that bill is debated and some of the responses that people have to it. I don't have very high hopes that we'll end up with an informed and useful debate in the Senate about cannabis legalization, but maybe behind closed doors.
And seem to demonstrate a pretty good understanding of how the industry currently works, how it might work, as you say, some of the issues and challenges that it would have going forward. And it's not always the case when people put legislation before Parliament. You know, sometimes you get, as I say, knee-jerk reactions, or you get pieces of legislation that are ill thought through because there's some kind of recent scare or whatever. I'll never forget the Dangerous Dogs Act in the UK, which famously was basically an act because a couple of people, you know, their Rottweilers attacked a small child, and suddenly we had the Dangerous Dogs Act, which is just clearly not fit for purpose. But this doesn't feel like one of those
reactions.
It feels like a party that's actually gone out of its way to talk to stakeholders, understand what the issues are. Yes, second guess some of the opposition, likely opposition. And therefore, it's a little bit frustrating to think that it probably will just get kind of, you know, yes, it will be debated, but it, you know, we're both sitting here saying it hasn't got a cat in hell's chance of passing, which is frustrating, really.
But it's part of the process because, you know, now that it exists and it's introduced to the Senate, it's on public record. So it's part of the public record about these things. So in a few years' time or whenever, when, you know, there's a cross-party working group that's set up to develop proposals for how cannabis might be legalized in New South Wales, this will be an important reference that they will draw from, and it'll inform that conversation to some extent. You know, in the same way that we saw, you know, the Victorian Law Reform Commission inquiry into legalizing medicinal cannabis, you know, several years ago, that process necessitated looking at, you know, various other historical inquiries and papers and things that had come before, you know, various parliaments in Australia. So, you know, it's all part of the puzzle. It's an iterative process. Designing new drug laws and drug law reform. So, yeah, it's a piece of the puzzle, but we're not going to legalize cannabis this year, I predict.
I think that's probably a good prediction. And yeah, I guess we're all going to have to be patient. Is probably the watchword here. Well, moving on. In other news, our chief correspondent Steve Jones has been writing about Can Group's acquisition of Satipharm and the opportunity it gives them to fast track a Schedule 3 medicine into the Australian market. I think it's fair to say Can has had an up and down time of it lately, but this felt like a kind of much needed shot in the arm for them.
Mm. Yeah, they've been through the wars, to put it sort of fairly, I guess, recently. But yeah, I mean, it's an exciting development. I thought it was quite meaningful and significant. This product is one of the few worldwide that has published, pharmacokinetic data on it. It's been used in Australia for some time. I think it's the product of choice for the controlled access scheme in Tasmania, but I can't really remember, to be honest. But it's one of the products that has more human clinical data behind it than some of the others that are on the market at the moment. But yeah, it's interesting to see. I mean, of course, Cann Group is paying close attention to the S3 stuff, as is everyone else at the moment. It's kind of sucking up all of the oxygen in the room still, so which is fine. But this is the start of a long marathon. So yeah, every man and his dog wants a piece of the S3 CBD stuff. We'll see who manages to thread the needle in the long run.
Interesting, because yeah, I think you said on LinkedIn that you thought that acquisition actually put Cann Group kind of, maybe not ahead of the pack, but certainly kind of, well positioned. And I guess the other piece of news that we had last week was Medlab Clinical signing a deal with over-the-counter medicines company Aritex for the development and distribution of its proprietary cannabinoid formulation Nano CBD as an OTC medicine. So it does sort of feel like things are getting serious.
We're definitely seeing more serious press releases, which is probably a sign that things are more serious under the water, so to speak. I wasn't aware that that company that Medlab collaborated with also did drug development. I thought they were exclusively in distribution, so maybe I've got the wrong end of that stick.
My understanding is it will enable Medlab to faster get to market.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the drug development side of things is the long and difficult and expensive process. Having a distribution deal in place is wonderful, but that's, possibly preemptive, if not premature. But what do I know? So we'll see. Maybe in the next sort of 6 months or so, we'll start seeing people talk about early stage clinical trial results. That'll be the real where the rubber meets the road, I think.
And I should say that I interviewed Sean Hall from Medlab Clinical last week, and he made mention of, just as a side comment, he made mention of a big sort of announcement about nano CBD. And my excuse is it was one of those where, I mean, he wouldn't have told me anyway, obviously, because they're an ASX listed company and these things have to go through various channels. But I was kind of looking at another tab and I was thinking about other things, and I just totally missed it. So it was my equivalent of the moment where I can't remember who it was, but somebody interviewed Prince Charles and Princess Diana and didn't ask if she was pregnant, and it turned out she was. So I know they're not technically the same thing, but me not
So
asking
Sean expecting, or
me
what's
not
the
asking Sean Hall about nano CBD was my
Right.
Princess Diana moment.
Okay. Well, I'm sure he won't hold it against you.
No, I'm sure he didn't. I think he probably quite enjoyed the fact that it went past me. Okay, quite how I managed to get from Sean Hall to Princess Diana, but glad I
Yeah,
did.
you've got royals on the mind, don't you? Don't you, Mark?
Yes,
You Brits, I swear.
I clearly do. Yes. Now, it's time for the blatant plug. Cannabis is hosting a free web to help cannabis firms understand the implications of the Narcotic Drugs Amendment Bill, which was introduced to Parliament earlier this month. Rhys, you'll be in conversation with Australian Medicinal Cannabis Association Secretary and lawyer Teresa Nicoletti and Head of Legal and Regulatory Affairs at the aforementioned Cann Group, Stephen Nataro. What can we expect?
Well, these are both big brains, I think it's fair to say, in the sector. Teresa, people may be like more familiar with than Stephen, just because her work is she works for Mills Oakley, a law firm, and they do work for lots of different cannabis companies. So she's been on stages and on screen sort of more often. But I mean, I think it's a great combination because Theresa has a wonderful and wide and deep sort of understanding of the whole sector and the whole supply chain and how things sort of, you know, happen. And then, you know, Steve's job is to actually get on with managing a cannabis company's licenses and permits and, you know, how that all interacts. So this is, you know, the proposed amendments that came out, yeah, a few weeks ago, they are going to be the foundations for probably quite a significant transformation in the way in which the commercial cannabis industry in Australia is regulated. And it'll be interesting to get their inputs into what they think is actually going on. Because, you know, I read this stuff and do my best and, you know, comment on it to the extent of my capacities, but I'm very much not a lawyer. There's always something in between the lines that you can read in the legislation, which I'm hoping Theresa and Stephen can help draw out for us. So yeah, it should be fun. It's going to be pretty casual and free flowing. So we'll see what their thoughts are and what they think it means for cannabis companies that are currently operating and people who might be considering submitting a license application.
And this isn't contentious legislation, unlike our discussion about the Greens legalisation bill. No reason to think this isn't going to pass the Senate and become law. So pretty important, I guess, that people understand what it means, because this one's actually going to happen.
This is actually happening, yeah. Well, we're recording this on a Monday afternoon, and I think the bill is being debated in the in the lower house soon, probably in a couple of hours time or so. So we'll know whether we're right or wrong after we record this.
Be a little bit embarrassing if it got voted down this afternoon. Our webinar may be something of a damp squib, but I'm sure it won't.
Wouldn't that be fun? I mean, it won't get voted down because it's a government bill and the government controls the house. So it's definitely getting passed.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if anyone objects to it or has any you know constructive criticism to the bill.
But it feels like it's going to happen. And what is also going to happen is our webinar at 6 p.m. tomorrow. That's Tuesday, February the 23rd. So you can sign up for that via the website. And as I say, you know, this is very, very likely, almost certainly going to become law and it's going to affect your business. So worth jumping on for that conversation. Now, finally, prominent conspiracy theorist, anti-vaxxer and celebrity chef Pete Evans has announced a run for the Senate. He's been unveiled by former One Nation MP Rod Cullerton as the Great Australia Party's first Senate candidate for the federal election. So obviously when he's not urging people to avoid the COVID-19 vaccine, Evans has made a documentary about cannabis called The Magic Plant. And, you know, some would say he's been manoeuvring to position himself as the face of cannabis in Australia. Reese, will you be voting Evans?
Will I be voting Evans? No, I think I'll number every single box to ensure that he is close to last for my vote. I mean, what a loser, really. Like, I mean, like, you know, he's been kicked off Facebook. He's been recently kicked off Instagram, and the only way he can maintain his sense of relevance is to try and run for Parliament. I don't think he has any idea what's in store for him. I don't think he has any idea what that's going to be like. And it's interesting, really, to see him, you know, be affiliated with such esteemed groups as the One Nation Party and other sort of fringe political groups. I don't think Pete Evans has the sort of broad appeal that he might need to secure himself a seat. But it'll be so much fun watching that.
It's interesting, actually, when we wrote about this a few months ago now, it's before Christmas, wasn't it? And we were talking about, you know, should, you know, because, as I say, that, you know, he had a, you know, platforms at a couple of events and was sort of kind of seemed to be positioning himself. And he's, you know, made the documentary. I don't know what's happened to that documentary. Has that seen the light of day yet?
I thought a while ago that it was going to go out on Netflix, and it never did. And the only place I can find it is behind a paywall on a website that Pete Evans owns. So maybe that relationship with Netflix also.
Don't know. Just thought of that, actually. Yeah, I mean, I was expecting it to have been released by now. But anyway, so there was that. There was, you know, as I say, you know, speaking at a couple of events, and a couple of people got very cross with us for actually even talking about it. And we're saying, you know, don't give him a platform. We were saying, well, the what we're arguing is we shouldn't give him a platform. And they're arguing, yeah, but you are giving him a platform. We're going, well,
yeah.
So it's you know, that whole kind of, you know, idea of kind of, you know, deplatforming people and cancelling people and stuff is a whole other debate and probably not for us. But
well,
it does, it does feel to me that, you know, it's a bit of a process, isn't it? You know, when the equivalent, you know, I know I always go back to my, you know, UK days, but the equivalent would have been
David. This is going to be about the royal family again.
No, this is David Icke. We're talking David Icke now. So do you know who David Icke is?
Evans interviewed David Icke on his podcast. So.
Right, yeah. So David Icke, you know, he was a sports presenter. I loved him. He used to present the snooker. He was great. And then it was sort of, there's a lag between the time that people think that's the person off the telly, there's a sort of inbuilt kind of, you know, magnetic aura around people who are on the telly. Maybe not so much now, but it certainly was, you know, when David Icke, you know, first started going a little bit off the wall, shall we say. And then there's a lag between that and the point at which you realise that actually somebody is fundamentally talking utter nonsense and has lost the plot. And it feels like Pete Evans was maybe in that period last year, and now he's tipped over into full Icke.
I think he's gone full Icke. I think he really has.
Yes.
So God bless him. Good luck to you, Pete. I wish you all the best in your political career. I mean, wouldn't that it would be profoundly disappointing if you actually got that seat, but I don't think it's going to happen.
No, and I don't want to disappoint you either, but I think it's also profoundly unlikely that Pete Evans is watching this and got your message. But maybe someone will pass it on. I'm sure they will. You were far more reasonable than I was hoping you were going to be in that segment.
I've said all that needs to be said about Pete Evans. I think he's a moron and a loser. You know, and you know, good luck to you.
He speaks very highly of you.
Yeah, I'm sure he does.
All right, Reece. Well, I'm going to let you get back to the unpacking. I noticed that you have managed to recreate the previous backdrop with the new backdrop.
I didn't want anyone to feel dislocated or, you know, they weren't, where I usually was. So
I have to say, I think putting the books back in exactly the same order was a stroke of OCD genius. I wasn't aware that you were capable.
Thanks.
All right. Have a good week and I'll chat to you soon.
Bye, everybody.
Cheers. Bye.